Oh, there is a mute button. Okay, I was muted. Great. So welcome to my second session today on HTML5. My name is Sascha Corti from Microsoft Switzerland. And I got a lot of questions, of course. What the hell? Half of Microsoft says HTML5. The other half says Silverlight. Is this a battle? Is this normal? What the hell are we to do? And these questions are all addressed in the end of my session. So I try not to overrun. But first, of course, I would like to introduce you to how we see HTML5, how we support it as Microsoft, and what I personally think are the most interesting features of HTML5. So what is HTML5? It's a specification. It's a standard that is being written now. I tried to look at the standard, of course, and I saw 1,100 printed pages. Then I didn't want to read them anymore at all. It's really huge. It changes HTML. It enhances HTML 4.01, which is already 10 years old. It's the first real release of the HTML standard since then. It adds some new elements. We will see them in detail later. Video, audio, canvas. But it also removes some old elements that are not used anymore, like the center tag or font tag. There are really better ways to doing this today. It's not finished. HTML5 is work in progress. So there is no final HTML5 today, and it's not just a marketing message. So many companies or sometimes even Microsoft really use it as a marketing message. Everything that's good and future must be HTML5. It's not. It's really there. It's interesting technology. You'll see that. I was really pleased when I prepared this to find there's really something to the topic. So first, there are two big consortia. One is the World Wide Web Consortium, and one is the ECMA people. And they have working groups, and these working groups, one group is about markup and code, one group is about styling, CSS, the third is about web services, how websites and services should interact and exchange data among them. One is scalable vector graphics, SVG, and then there is a tiny one, geolocation. They're all alone, probably three people in a small room. And then there is the script guys, ECMA script. They have their own specification, their own working group, really tiny. And then there is the documents, the specifications. And it's quite a few of them. And as you may see, if you are really well-eyed, here in the bottom left corner, there is HTML5. That's it. That's all. So thank you for being here. No, of course, when we talk about HTML5, we mean everything down there. All of these specifications playing together, of course. But HTML5 itself, the basic tags, the markup, is its own little specification in what we now call HTML5. And when we say that, we mean this whole big amount of specification. The status, so there's like a development project, should be. There is a first public working draft. Then there is a working draft where people decide what we should do. Then there is the candidate recommendation. That's Microsoft calls this, or it's the last call. We call it feature complete. There, nothing new should be added. And then there is bug fixing, and there is a proposed recommendation, and then there's a call to implement where we say, okay, now we are there, we should start implementing it, and then after a while, there is a real final recommendation. Where are we now? We are very shortly before last call, which is May 2011, and then they expect, that's published by the World Wide Web Consortium, they expect 2014 to be the real recommendation year. So we're still in the beta, so to say, of HTML5 and of most of those specs. Now let's take this map we had before and put colors in it. Now you see many of the specification, everything around HTML, is a working draft, so it's not even code complete, it can still change. The script guys were pretty quick. They're a recommendation. And you see in web apps, they're quite far too. And scalable vector graphics is already candidate recommendation. But you also in here, you find a few very interesting things that will change. So you saw one browser was implementing WebSockets. And then it changed. It really it changed, and they had to redo. And sites that were starting to implement it had to basically change all their code because the specifications can still change. So do not overestimate how far it is right now. But there is quite a few tags that are already being broadly used, even though they are not final. But the most interesting of them I would really like to show you. So HTML5 itself, it's plain markup. It's the pointy brackets and the text in between. But we have quite a few new of those tags. Let's look a little bit graphically how that should work. So now we are trying to go away from the diffs. It used to be diff everything. Diff main content, diff introduction, diff don't know what, diff something else, diff, diff, diff. And of course, everybody named their diff differently. That's why they're called diffs. No, that's not true. But there was no standard in how you would name your main entry. And now these diffs are replaced by real markup tags like nav for navigation or header and footer or article or aside for a menu on the side. And the cool thing about this is, let's look into one of these articles. An article can have a header too, like the main page. And the header can have a time, a heading, and the article text and a footer. So the good thing here is, when we remove all those diffs with their crazy creative names, diff 001, diff 002, we really help screen readers, we help applications that screen scrape HTML, that try to make sense of a HTML page, that tries to get to an article. Okay, there's the RSS feed mostly, but sometimes there isn't. And these pages become really much easier to understand for a piece of software, also for a coder, but especially for a piece of software, search engine, to parse and understand which part is which. Where is the article? Where is a menu? Or where is some advertisement? I want the article. And the good thing is, you may notice here in red, there's one div that doesn't have a name. It's the main content. The main content of the site. They forgot. They didn't put it in on purpose. They probably weren't sure how to call it. So you probably will want to add a div for the main content and then add your articles in there. But there is no standard for that. I was a little puzzled at first when I saw that one. And of course, we need a tool to develop for HTML5. And right now, Microsoft does not have a real HTML5 tool. There is a service pack for Expression Web that adds a lot of HTML5, but we as developers, we want to go further. We would like to use Visual Studio or a real developer debugger tool. And right now, there is two projects hosted on a website that you see the URL, and one is an HTML5 IntelliSense add-on, and one is a CSS3 IntelliSense add-on. You have to manually copy them. But the good news is, since I did this presentation last about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there has been a service pack 1 of Visual Studio that incorporates these add-ons. So no more chaotic manually copying files in folders, but you will get nice IntelliSense for CSS 3 and for HTML5 in Visual Studio. So, but of course you can use any other tool to edit HTML, Notepad, Expression Web, whatever you like. It's markup and script, so it is not required to use Visual Studio. But I was nicely asked, pointing at my salary, that I might quickly talk about Visual Studio. I don't never know why they do that. So please cut that from the video. HTML5 markup elements. Let's look at them. So that's HTML 401. And if we want to make HTML5 from this, we first remove a couple of the attributes here in the doc type. We just say doc type is HTML. Then we just say HTML. We don't need this old namespace. And actually, what we can do, we can get rid of the head and the body. We just leave in one meta tag. The HTML can be ditched too. And we call character set here equals UTF-8. And we say, okay, we want the title. and we call that hello HTML5. So this is the minimal HTML5 page, and this one, of course, can go away. And now you say that's not even valid XML here. You don't have closing tags. This is ugly. But if you go and validate this in there is a validator tool. Sorry about that. Trying to get to my web browser. If you want to validate this and check it, it will tell you, yeah, it has two warnings, like most code when you try to compile, but it passed. It's valid. It's valid HTML. But in here, of course, it would be impossible to put script. You need to put that in the head, and you need to target elements that you find, get element by name or ID, which should be located in the body. It would be a bit hard. So the minimal page we're going to use is like this, valid HTML2. It looks a little more familiar, but it gets rid of a lot of the strange attributes in the doc type and stuff. This is basic HTML. So let's look at a finished site that's just one page containing CSS, styling, and HTML using all those new elements. And the good thing is, if we open this, you have all the styling done in CSS. You have a nice web page. Just HTML, no script in here, nothing. And the good is, if we start the debugger tools of IE, we can now go into, for example, look at what this is, click on this element, and we see that this is a side. It's a sidebar with its own section. It has its own header. It has its own content. And it gets really easy to name elements in HTML5. And this is the footer element with all the legal stuff. There's even an HTML tag for the small print, the legal things. So you see this is a basic, I think it should be in here. It's just in the footer section here, a paragraph. So they didn't make it a legal section. You can still ID, of course, anything. Add an ID so you can get it from script and change it. That doesn't change. It just adds new basic tags to your HTML. So that's the very, very basic. Let me close a few windows here. That's the very, very basic markup. New tags for things that have been just used as diffs. But we want to go a little further. Let's look at HTML video. So we can play video right in the browser without a plugin. And we have quite a few attributes that can control how the video looks. Should it buffer ahead? Should it start playing immediately? How big is it? What format is it too? So here, there's a format war going on. The Microsoft and Apple, you'll probably not hear this very often, but Microsoft and Apple, we are very both very much in favor of H.264, but it's not a free format. So somebody who wants to create content and license content has to pay a fee. It is being discussed now to really open up H.264 to everybody and remove the licensing would be great, of course. And the other camp where Google Chrome and Firefox mostly is at home is working with VP8 WebM. That's a Matroska format. And we are both for each other writing plugins. So we write a plugin that H.264 works in Chrome, for example. And the Google guys, the Chrome guys, are writing a plugin so that the WebM format works in Internet Explorer. So I hope this is not going to kill or damage this development. And I hope there will be multiple standards supported by multiple browsers, and people won't have to encode their videos 17 times. Right now, while in development, it's a little chaotic. The numbers in the green field say the version number when it starts supporting this format. Now you probably have a Windows media file or some other source of video, and you will have to convert them. And again, there is a tool. It's an Expression Media Encoder. The unfortunate thing is you need the pro version because there, if you want to encode, the fee has to be paid. So in the free version, you have most things, but not the H.264 encoder. So you will have to use the pro version. But once you use that, It will be quite simple. You can just open Encoder and say that you want to start a new conversion or transcoding project. And then you wait for a moment. You wait. And then you import one of your probably Windows Media Video files. And then under encoding, you say you want MP4. And you can choose the video quality. So basically, it's just transcoding into MP4. So it would be very nice if you would purchase Expression Encoder to convert videos. But please pause the recording. I thought, isn't there a free tool to do that? And there is. There is the Video LAN Client Media Player. I've used it forever. But I have not known that it is a video converter too. So should there be any reason for you not to buy Expression Media Encoder, I don't know why you would not do that, but it could be, then you can use the Video LAN client to convert videos to. You add a video of your choice, like WMV, Videos Media Video, and then you say convert. And here you say which codec, and here you got even H.264. Actually, it shouldn't be here. It's a little illegal, but who cares? And there is WebM. You can even do WebM. So we cannot do WebM at the moment. If you want to do the other standard for Google and Firefox, Chrome and Firefox, WebM, this Video LAN client can convert into WebM or H.264. And if you're really into codecs, you can even edit your own bit rates and frame rates for video and audio here to optimize quality on performance. So these are tools for you to create videos for HTML5. So let's look at the basic, let's take a basic HTML file and create a video tag. So we go video. So, and then we say source equals, and then I choose one of my files. It's in a subfolder. It's on the video videos. I choose the video.mp4. Diablo will be shown later, so don't worry. So that's basically everything that's needed for an absolutely basic video codec. I can run this page. Yes. And I see, for now, an empty frame. I see there should be a video tag here, but it's not playing. Oh, it's playing. Oh, why are you playing? I want to build in a bug here. You know, when I want to do it right, I get bugs. And I want to do bugs, I get it right. So actually, my IIS is very smart, but it shouldn't be. Actually, it should, a normal web project should break and say, oops, stop, you cannot play videos, because you're downloading a file format, a MIME type that I don't know. And you will have to add, you should be having to add the special MIME types. It's when your technology gets too smart. Outsmarts you. Damn. So you add the MIME types. You can do that in the IIS configuration manager or in the XML file that configs your web server of choice. So this works very well in Apache as well. You just go into the XML configuration file, the site config, something it's called, .siteconfig, and then you just make these MIME types known. And in the .NET world and in the IIS world, IIS 7 world, I use a web config file and say, these are all the types I'm going to be using. I'm going to use SVG later too. WOF, you will learn what that is. And all these video formats. So now it should play. Probably won't anymore. that was a weird one. So here's my video. I can play it. I can pause it. I don't have any controls. I have to right-click, so it's not very obvious that this is a video that can be played. But I can also, for example, change play speeds right away. That's quite nice. And, of course, I'd like to customize my video a little bit. So let's quickly remove my source video from here, from my video itself, and say that that I have in my video, I want to set the source. Source, and then I should be able to paste. Of course, I miss a character. And there is, come on. There is my source. And now in the video tag, I can start customizing the video tag. For example, I say poster equals. Sometimes IntelliSense gets it, sometimes not. Videos, poster, JPEG. I have a autoplay. And this is a little tricky because it can say autoplay equals false and it will still autoplay. So whatever you say, I love you, works too. As soon as the tag is here, it says autoplay. It ignores what the parameters are. Controls, the same. I want controls for my video. Loop equal. Now here I need to set it true or loop. And preload equals auto. So if you have 20 videos on your page and you don't want to buffer all of them and then the user watches one, you say preload equals false or another value, and then it will accordingly only play or download the video that the person wants to watch. And playback rate, you can set the speed of playback right here. Or you can also set, of course, width, whatever, 800. So you can control the video window. So, yes. It starts right away. I get the player controls. It will loop.
Flying cars.
So it's a little bit more intuitive. But the player controls are set by the browser. So every browser has its own controls, and they all look a little different. Actually, my Chrome should be able to play this format because I have the compatibility in. So these are Chrome's controls looking a little different, but basically they're almost the same. And that's that. Poster is just, you saw it quickly, in Chrome we have a little bug. Sometimes poster doesn't show, but don't tell anybody. It's just an image that you show before the video actually plays. So that's the poster. Okay. Now, the problem is something I miss from Silverlight. I cannot simply go full screen by double clicking, and there is no full screen feature. So to add full screen playback, it's also a little bit of a security issue. To add full screen playback, you need a little script. And let's add this script to, it's basically into our head here. The script basically checks on the resize event, adds itself to the resize event, and checks the window size and changes the element size accordingly. And of course, here on the body, onload, I want to have the resized fired too, so when it opens, it already has the maximum size. So this is the closest you can get to a full screen player. Of course, you can personal attach robots. The full screen event to a back in the year PF11, gives you, takes away the controls, so it really starts to be looking like a full screen experience. So this is a little code that should compensate for this not working, double-clicking to play full screen on the video, which was removed for security reasons. I just quickly remove it for a later demo because it won't be compatible for something I'm trying later. So here we are. Another one is if you have a second video source, if you converted your video using VLC into WebM, you can of course add a second source, and this will now also play in, for example, Opera. Opera doesn't do the H.264, and I haven't got a helper, so this will now play the WebM. If I say save video, you'll see that it is WebM that was downloaded and played. And I also briefly showed that in my previous session. The good part of this all, close here. The good part in here is that, here we go. It will go through all the sources until it finds one that it can play and it plays it. That's, I think, a very good thing. Of course, if you can't find the source it can play, it will say whatever you write. Sorry, I can't play videos. So if you run that in IE8, so quickly tell this browser to be an IE8, and if I reload the page, it will say, sorry, I can't play videos. But of course, that's not what you probably will want to do. What you will want to do is add a Silverlight player or Flash player, but probably Silverlight, of course, and only if we can't play anything, we will default back to Silverlight, and that's the case here. So now I have Silverlight player in IE8 emulation because we could not play the videos. And here, of course, the double-click full screen in the plugin works. So that's a way of really adding fallbacks for other browsers to your video elements. So, and another one. It's quite interesting here. It's a little script that detects just, it says, player can play type, and I tell him, player can play type video MP4, or can you play videos at all? Can you play MP4? And can you play MP4 of a specific codec? And when I run this page, the first test, is video tag supported? That's the first question. Can play type null, means all the types not equal null, says, yes, I can. Now, the next question is, can you play MP4? IE9 should be able to, and it says, maybe. So that's the official answer by the browser, is maybe, meaning I can play MP4, but you didn't specify a format, so the video could be in a format that I can't play, but maybe I can. So now I give him the real format. It's a ABC1, 420.01e, MP, really, that's a format I know it can play. It can play, believe me. So, probably. Can you play that? Probably. Now, this is about, not about compatibility, but about, I can be on a netbook without the real powerful graphics processor. Or the network might be too slow. That probably should work, but don't be too sure. So, you can query the video playback capabilities, but even the browser itself is not 100% sure if it can do it. So a little experimental, but it does work, actually. If you have a normal computer or a good, more or less good netbook, it will be able to play videos. So another one that's quite good is if you quickly look on YouTube, you know, of course, it's the great Flash-based video portal, but you can navigate to a sub HTML5 page and register yourself using a cookie, so it's machine-based, for the HTML5 trial. And now, if I go back to my video, I will get the HTML5 player. So save video as, every player has it, but this one only tells me that I shouldn't be downloading their videos in a very, very funny way. So HTML5 in YouTube works, but you have to get a cookie that for every browser actually that activates it for your machine. It's not the default yet. So the audio tag is very much the same as the video tag. It only plays audio, though, no picture. But the attributes are very similar. If you don't show any controls, play, pause, rewind forward, it will just be totally invisible. If you show controls, they're quite small. But apart from that, audio and video, syntax-wise, are the same. And here, MP3 and AAC audio basically work everywhere. So there is not the big war going on support. Let's look a little further into the canvas tag. Some of you may remember the Etch-a-Sketch. You could turn two knobs and it would draw an image and then you would shake it and it's gone away. Do not try it on your computer, especially the shaking part. But the canvas works very similar to that. So you have a field that you define and then you use JavaScript to draw. You can move on the canvas, you can add gradients, add elements, add rectangles, you can even name them, so you can find them later from script. And if we look at the very simple canvas demo, so here is just a canvas with a certain width, height and stuff. And, of course, Canvas is not supported. The fallback, if Canvas cannot be parsed, then the browser will show this one. And the script only draws a gradient and a rectangle, and that's basically what it is. It's vector graphics programmatically generated on the page. The interesting thing is one function we have. So here I can draw with my mouse. Awesome. And then I can save and right-click and save as picture. Then I get a PNG of my great drawing here. Me, nervous before a speech. It's the title of the drawing. And basically there is a method called canvas2dataURL. And that's this method that allows you to export the canvas and all its content as a bitmap, a PNG in our case. Another one is showing an image. You load an image, you initiate an image, you load it, get context 2D, you add it to the canvas, and that's it. The problem is, this should also not be working. Probably it is. Come on. You should be showing me a browser window. So, okay, the fish is not showing because my image was told to render before it was loaded. So what I need is a little code that encapsulates the loading of the image and only loads it once it's done. So to save a little time, I'm a little already in the backlog. Here we go. So what you do is you wrap it in a load function, and once this function has executed, you only then draw it on screen. And if you render this one, I have to quickly copy this to my, wrong thinking. So, this should be loading my fish. Be nice and show my fish. You evil, let me quickly, here. So, I know you can show my fish. So, here is my gorgeous fish. So, you just basically have to handle the load event and wait for all the resources to be loaded before you really try to draw them on screen. That's an error I think everybody who starts HTML5 Canvas has. At a certain point, you think, everything is right. Why the hell are my assets that I tried to draw on the canvas not working? And that's the problem then in that case. So there's also two ways of timing. There is a frame-based and a time-based animation method. So either you can count milliseconds and then draw a frame, or you can just draw an image, or you can just say draw an image every tenth frame or every single frame. Of course, it will result, frame-based animation is faster on fast computers and slower on slower computers, and time-based animation is always very precise but maybe a bit laggy if you have a computer that is not as fast as you try to use time-based animation. So you can also animate pretty easily. You see just a little, I have to redraw the image, I move the image and I redraw it. It's all you need to do basic animations in Canvas. And if we quickly look at transformation, this is one image that is rendered and then transformed. It's a square with transparencies, so you can create these graphical effects with just very, very few lines of code. You get the 2D context. There will be at a certain point probably a 3D canvas context, but right now only the 2D context is implemented. And you just translate and redraw this using a for each loop. And if we look at video, what we do here is we have a normal video that plays, and we have a canvas tag. And what we do is we use snapshot of the video to draw in the canvas, and we do that every few milliseconds. So what you get is you get a real video, and you get a canvas that shows the same thing as shown in the video, but it's basically screen grabbing and shown. It's like an image brush or a video brush in Silverlight. And when you start out like that, it is very easy to, for example, before you draw, to flip the video, to translate it, and to scale it, and to create a gradient here. It's just a little gradient. And then to fill this rectangle with the gradient you have prepared. And what you get with this is the same you had before. Gorgeous. Is a flipped video that fades into the background, calculated in real time. I think it's quite powerful. You can add real effects like that. The way you've been doing in Silverlight, it's possible in HTML5. It will not render with the same performance on all browsers, but I think most browsers should be able to render this without much issues. Come on. Okay, most, not all. But you see, there is differences, but you will have to detect for capabilities, but you can do quite amazing effects here. Another one, I quickly want to show you here in effects. Here is a little bit more script, and I found that on the craftymind.com website and changed it a little. I hope he's not angry. But this is video playing in a video element in real time and being rotated via JavaScript. Another one is video deconstruction. It's also the script. This takes a little bit, but there's very, very many libraries of these kinds of scripts available. You will find them. For example, here is real time video distortion done in JavaScript. You'll find many libraries if you look for a functionality. As weird JavaScript can be to develop these things, there is very, very much content available for developers if they want to use it in their projects or sites. So let's quickly close on the canvas tag. Started with canvas demos and ended up in video demos again. Here are some of the most common libraries for HTML5. The Modernizer, that helps you in detecting browser capabilities. jQuery, of course, that makes it very easy to find an element in your DOM, in your document object model, and manipulate it. In JavaScript, you have to get element by ID or a name and then put it in a variable and then manipulate it. In jQuery, it's just string, brackets, quote, element name, and then what you want to apply to it, a transformation or a calculation or whatever. There is Easel, which is a library to build canvas-based games. It has real game mechanics built in, like, you know, sprites, sparkles, game semantics. You can use this library if you... There was a game done, I've linked it to, Pirates Loved Daisies. Have a look at this. It's plain. It looks like a Silverlight Flash game. It's plain canvas element using this Easel library. And there is an Adobe Illustrator to canvas exporter. So if you create vector-based elements in Adobe Illustrator, you can export them into canvas elements, scriptable with names. If you have animations in your Illustrator files. They are exported as JavaScript animations and they're working. So it's a free download from the Microsoft Mix website. So all these libraries are open, free to use. They're also, most of them are really open source. So you can take them, change them, add them to your projects and use them for HTML5 projects. Scalable vector graphics, looking at that quickly. So it's this is a syntax. In Canvas, we had script manipulating graphics. In SVG, we have an XML or HTML, or it's SVG syntax that describes vector graphics. And you can style it from cascading style sheets. That's quite interesting. So let's look at it in a demo rather than talk the theory over too much. In SVG, you will find there is an interesting one. Just quickly, let me open Wikipedia here. So they have flags here for every country, and the flags are stored as SVGs. So these files are SVGs. Of course, they're much smaller than. Let me see if I find the if they have embedded it right away. No, they have. It's an external resource. So. Yeah, it's much smaller. Here you see it. It's much smaller than the regular graphic, of course. If I look at the flag here, the British flag, for example, or the French flag, it's just three basic shapes with three colors, and that's it's already a. Come on, open up for me. Sometimes it doesn't want to open. Come on, view in browser. Okay. Aha, I need to embed it. Sorry about that. I was a bit ahead. Of course, I need to either link it externally or embed it, and that's what I wanted to show here. You can now, that's new in HTML5, you can embed SVG right into the HTML and not just load it as an external resource. And here, you have a Swiss flag, and of course, it's just a few four lines of code describing this vector graphic element. You can also style SVG. So here we have a British flag, and now I add a little bit of styling code. I need a cascading style sheet, a CSS element, put that in the head, which basically says I have a background, which is another SVG, and then I want to find an element cross and change its stroke. So now the background, come on, the background of the whole element is a French flag, which is also SVG, and the British flag is inside the HTML. And now, having been so close together, French and British flags probably the British will turn a little green. So let's take this cross here and give it an ID equals cross. And now if I reload this, I used cascading style sheets to style this SVG element by applying this little style up here, changing the stroke colors or making it black like this. But this demo gets very political very quick, so I'll abandon this one. But it's very interesting that you can find even SVG elements from your script or from your CSS and manipulate them in real time or add them as a background image resource to your project. So that's a little bit of scalable vector graphics. Very good if you really have vector-based images to get them into your projects and really use them. Now, cascading style sheets, CSS3 goes beyond CSS 2.1. The complete sorry, CSS 2.1 support is for IE9. But we go also supporting many of the CSS3 features now, like selectors, border radius, background. I'll show you a couple of them. So every color in cascading style sheet can now also have a transparency. So elements shine, let the background shine through. Or you can use media queries. I like that a lot. Just coming up in a demo. If you're working with media queries, there is a great, great online presentation on this topic. Media queries basically is about rendering content different based on what screen size or device you looks at it. Not by detecting the browser string and say, iPhone, I have to give them the mobile site, but by analyzing the screen capabilities and the size and then using different CSS based on that. And we have WOF, Web Open Font Format, the ability to add real rich fonts, TrueType fonts, to your web applications. And they will be downloaded by the browsers and displayed by the browser. And you just put them in as you would an image resource. It's just a font resource. So let's look at a couple of these things in action. So the first is a CSS using alpha blends, using transparency. So if I run this little demo, you see a background, which is this moire, and then the transparent foreground. So you see the border adding a shadow too here. We have a rounded borders, rounded corners, and shadows. That's also new in CSS3. And the background with an opacity 0.6. I could go for 0.2 and have it be even more transparent. So you have the background, or you can make this one, you can 0.1, that's also transparency here. Ah, okay, that accumulates just, the background. It just goes away, it gets too faint then. Okay, so that's basic features. Now, media queries, this page, what it does basically, let me first show you in a quick demo. Come on. So, it constantly measures the width of my browser, and based on the width, it re-renders the content for different device types. One point, it will even leave out the image. That's the mobile version, that's the netbook version, and that's the full-blown desktop version. And these selectors are quite easy. You add your basic CSS elements, and then here are the content selectors, and you say, if I have the media screen and the maximum width is 999 pixel, I want this applied. So you can override a previously set style, or you can add new styles. And the same goes here for max width 800. So everything that's smaller than 800, or and the image even gets not, that's the mobile page, the image gets removed and the container gets sized. So you add these media selectors just to your style sheet, and it will constantly evaluate how big is the page and which style is currently to be applied. And there's also other, you may have seen, I've always gone for the screen, there's other media. You can style content for printers, so the browser knows now this document is about to print, and then it will apply the style sheet for printing. But here, I've only added screen media selectors. Quickly, look back here. The Web Open Font Format is also, you add a normal text, and then in the style sheet you say, I have a font family, my font, you name this whatever you want. You tell it where the Web Open Font Format file lives, and then you just apply it, the font face. And if you run this, you'll see the normal text displayed in a special font, and there is a font squirrel site that allows you to convert existing fonts into Web Open Font format or download. They have quite a few fonts available for download. Here are some of the popular ones. You can find quite a lot. Here are comic fonts, comic book fonts. You can find quite many open source fonts to use, or you can upload and have it generate WOF from your existing fonts if you want to load a font in a project. But of course, people who parse the source code of your HTML page will find the file, and it's like an image on the internet. People can download it and use it. So if you have a copyright font that you do not want to go into other people's hands, you probably wouldn't want to use it like that. But if you find a very good font for your web page, this can be a very interesting or easy way to add it. Here we go. Another one I had in the slides, I had a little link. There is a demo done by Microsoft, never mind the bullets. And it's all done using CSS and animation done using CSS. And it's really good. It's a comic book, an animated comic book that it even has sound that tells a Western story, depending on the speed of the network connection. So you can scroll with your mouse through these images, and you see the parallax scrolling of the backgrounds, all done in CSS. It's quite nicely done here as a demo. So you see, can be quite powerful too for animations, for adding multiple images on top of each other and animating them. It's a very, very nice project here. And the last feature I would like to highlight out of HTML5 is ECMAScript 2.6.2. So if you look at it, it's quite big to get into, but if you as a developer, you find many features that you used from object-oriented programming, easier way of selecting, finding things in your JavaScript, having arrays or iterating through arrays made much, much easier. You have a very good, better object model in here, and the Chinese National Museum of Art has done an animated 3D exposition just using JavaScript in real time, so you can move around here, go to elements, look at them in detail, go through a room or look at the pictures here, navigate this page. I think you can even go in a different room here. And this is all done using JavaScript, so it is more powerful, I'd absolutely say, than previous versions of JavaScript, but still, it's a script language, so debugging can be a bit tricky, and I do urge you to, if you want to do something, have a look if there is already a library there for you to use that does this functionality. Use it, adopt it to your own liking. That's a very, very good way of easing JavaScript development. So, HTML5. If you look at IE9, you will find many of the HTML5 features supported, but not all. There is, for example, WebSockets, that's a peer-to-peer communication between sites, web workers, background workers, or what else is there? Drag and drop, for example. These are features we do not support yet in IE9 because they are in such an early stage of development that they may completely change. What we have instead is a website here, HTML5 Labs, .interoperabilitybridges.com, where we publish our working drafts of support, of how in the future we want to support or think of supporting these very early draft specifications. It's also full of warnings telling, do not use this in productive environments. It may totally change. You may be rewriting your web page 7 times. But you can learn a lot from this. IndexedDB is a client-side database with indexes and filtering and fast querying. It will be very powerful once we release, and then we will absolutely support it in the IE, but it's just too early in a stage to productively support now. But you can look at our implementations. You can play with them, download them, I think WebSockets is implemented as a chat application in Silverlight. Quite interesting to learn and look at where we are going ourselves with standards that are still very young and not supported. Now, on the mobile, there's mobile development. Many companies looking at that right now at the moment, and they have a problem of, I would like our application for Windows Phone, iPhone, and Android. But of course, I have to learn three completely different, the beautiful Silverlight and Java of Android and Objective-C of iPhone. It's just, it's a little much. But we want to be on all platforms. Why not go HTML5? It would actually be absolutely possible, but people with phones expect apps. They have been trained by Apple, by Android, and by us to use apps, to find apps on the market or on an app store. And they are used to the high interactivity and responsiveness and fast startup of the app. If you have a very data-centric and not very interaction-centric interaction-centric application, you can absolutely do it in HTML5 on the phone. Windows Phone 7 will, with IE9 coming to Windows Phone 7 this fall, will absolutely support HTML5, not quite right now, but we will. And it will be a good alternative for very data-centric apps. But if your app has lots of interaction, you want fast startup, you want to cache data locally, to not always download everything, HTML5 is today, just the adoption is not there yet. It's also the speed is lacking a bit. There are frameworks popping up where you can create an HTML5 application and it is then compiled into a native application. There are a couple of apps being developed like that at the moment. Swiss app that does that is Vanilla payment application. It looks quite good, but you see that it's a hidden web page. The interaction is just not the same and the speed. That's as far as mobile apps. Now, on the desktop, the question is HTML5 or Silverlight? Which to be used where or when? And I think that HTML will eat a little bit of Silverlight's lunch in, let's say, multimedia. Why should we still need a plugin to play a video or audio on a web page? Why should we still need a plugin for an animated menu? That's overkill. The browser should be able to do that. And it can do it, and it makes absolute sense to use HTML5 for that. But if you really create an interactive business application with downloading data from a server, maybe caching it, showing it to the user, have him select rows, show master detail data views, doing that in HTML5 is more than just a pain. It's terrible. Doing it in JavaScript, it's doable. Crazy things are done in JavaScript, but it's just too expensive to maintain and build it. I think plugins, Silverlight, but also Flash, will have a very important role in that field. And even if you look at the development of Silverlight, it used to be just a browser plugin for web content. Now it runs out of browser. On the desktop, it has COM automation. It will have pinwalk in Silverlight 5. It will have 3D. I think Silverlight is really also going into the direction of where you want to be make it real. Even a desktop app replacement, try using Silverlight as far as it works. And only use WPF only if there's something that you just can't do in Silverlight. Or on the mobile, Windows Phone, Silverlight is at home. It might become at home on the Xbox one day. I don't know that, but I have heard rumors about that. So these are not being replaced by HTML5. HTML5, just in the pure web, multimedia animation, drawing graphics in real time, shadows, and there, I think HTML5 will have a very strong future and it will be the standard. And we can expect browsers to be able to do that without the plugin today. But it's not, for me, it's not the same thing. These are two kinds of applications. So, on resources, these are three books I read. They're actually very good. The HTML5 book on the far left by, of course, I always know the name, by Bruce Lawson and Remy Sharp. It's very good to read, a very good read. Usually these technical books are a little sleepy, boring, but this is a very, very funny read too. Very recommended if you want to get a hold of HTML5, get your hands on it. Then there is, of course, the O'Reilly HTML5 book that is more of a compendium. It's more complete, it's much bigger, but you look something up, you don't read it from beginning to end. And if you're a little bit at war with JavaScript, as I was in the beginning, think, why the hell are we going from fully object-oriented worlds to back to scripts? Help. This book here, the Good Parts, JavaScript from O'Reilly, is a very, very good read too. It shows you how to do a lot of things that you thought were very tough to do in JavaScript or difficult, and gives you quite a good start of if you want to do more JavaScript development. Of course, there's other good blogs and links here. You will get the slides within the week, I think. So if you want to look at HTML5, I absolutely tell you, please do it. Look at what it can do for you, for your site. Make sure it runs in the browsers you're targeting. And don't think it will just kill Silverlight, because some people at Microsoft really say, yes, HTML5 is the future of the web. It's just HTML5. It is both. Absolutely. So that is my part. Thank you very much. 2 minutes over. I'm into the lunch. It's a dangerous thing to do.
That's fine. Thank you very much, Sasha.